far.
Previously, in Aphon Kiss by Alice Dale, David told Philippa about what had caused the parting of the ways with his wife, her need for possessions and excitement. She had trained as a shorthand typist and landed a job in a firm of solicitors, which had proved to be the beginning of the end of their marriage.
I'd have thought having a salary would have allowed her to buy all the things sophisticated women think they need.
But expensive clothes weren't enough. Oh, she was very good at her job and must have been admired in the office because lawyers and the firm started inviting us to dinner parties. Then we felt obliged to reciprocate. The trouble was, Gloria had never learned to cook. Well, certainly not the kind of food we'd been served at dinner parties. Her mother had always had a live-in cook, so she insisted on hiring caterers.
Her mother had a cook? They must have been quite wealthy. What did or does her father do?
Oh, he started out as a car mechanic. Not particularly well educated, but an acute businessman. He got a loan and started his own repair business and later moved into car sales. He made a lot of money. I got the impression the money had gone to her mother's head. Oh, she was a social climber. And Gloria decided to follow suit, but sending her to a posh girls' school was a mistake.
Why?
One of the few times when Gloria opened up to me, having had a little too much to drink, she admitted she'd felt inferior to girls whose fathers were in professions, doctors, lawyers, and one was a high court judge. And she never invited friends to her home in case her father used bad grammar. So, invitations from the other girls dried up. Perhaps that's why she went for the job in a solicitor's office and started trying to be the perfect hostess.
That makes sense.
Well, not on my salary. Her expenses went through the roof, and her small contributions didn't cover it.
Well, we all know what money worries can do to a family.
To a marriage, too. There was no family, remember?
These intimacies were making Philippa uncomfortable. David, I think you should stop. I never wanted to pry into the details of your personal life.
But I want to tell you. I want you to know everything.
Taking one of her hands in both of his, he continued.
The day she left, I got a peck on the cheek and a goodbye, darling. There was no see you soon or I'll be in touch, just goodbye. And I'll never forget the look of pure joy on her face when she jumped into the taxi that was taking her to the barracks. I wonder how many recruits arrive in a taxi, After basic training, that's when I received the very brief note, telling me they decided she was best suited as a chauffeur's. Then she went on to say she'd been assigned to drive a major and would soon be heading south. She's never made any contact since.
But they all get leave when basic training's finished.
I suppose so, but she didn't spend it with me. And now the army won't tell me where she is, I presume, to protect the major's whereabouts.
A long silence followed all this information, and David's eyes were fixed on Pippa's confused expression. Her reaction was so important to him. When she spoke, it confirmed his worst fears. But you're still married to her. And even before all that, none of us ever met Gloria, forcing herself to say her name. And you never mentioned her in the staff room when the rest of us referred to our families and homes.
Yes, usually nice things, family parties, little triumphs of children or relatives. Our marriage was already falling apart when I joined the staff 2 years ago. My work bored Gloria, and she flatly refused to attend anything at the school. She started going out every evening with girlfriends and told me to make more friends down at the pub, knowing perfectly well I'll never go to a pub.
Perhaps you needed to take her out more.
Believe me, I tried. But she turned down anything I suggested. Theatre, films, a restaurant dinner.
Pippa lifted a stop right there hand. I don't want to hear any more about your marriage, David. It's making me feel like a peeping Tom. Have you ever told anyone else about all that?
Of course not. I wouldn't dream of it. I'm telling you because I want us to be completely honest with each other. You've told me so much about yourself and family, and I've never told you anything about me. It doesn't seem fair.
That was when I had problems, and you've always been such a good listener. And I've appreciated your help, especially with Stan's probate. But...
But what? Pippa, I hope this won't affect our friendship.
David, you said yourself you have feelings beyond friendship. And if I'm honest, so do I. But we simply can't go on like this, because it won't go anywhere. So, no more coffees at the Corner Cafe. And I certainly can't go to the Ascot Cinema with you tonight. I'm sorry if that sounds like Gloria, but you know my reasons are very different. Forces to the Fore took place a week before Christmas and, like all Forces shows, was a resounding success. Even those in wheelchairs were brought to the hall, and nurses were in attendance everywhere. Only the critically ill and their carers remained in the wards. The whole front row was stiff with brass from the nearby camp, ready to forgive anything, even ridiculously exaggerated impersonations of themselves. Craig was given 3 spots in the show. Since there was no opening chorus, he was given the warm-up spot. He started with the World War I song, It's a Long Way to Tipperary, followed by Bless 'Em All, and finishing with Roll Out the Barrel. As expected, everyone joined in, and the mood of the show was set.
It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way. Bless 'em all, the long and the short and the tall. Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun.
His second appearance was more difficult because he had a hard act to follow. A line of solid masculinity doing the can-can in black frilly frocks and bright red knickers topped off with a red garter on each manly thigh and a matching red band across each forehead, feathers and wigs being impossible to find. Dora from the canteen, although so often stern, had proved a brilliant seamstress, along with her team of local ladies conscripted with the promise of free tickets for the concert. Pamela's biggest challenge in the show was the fingerwork on the Offenbach accompaniment to the can-can, while the biggest challenge for the boys was finishing with the splits, and the variety of attempts was hilarious. Of course, it brought the house down. After that, it needed a superb voice like Craig's to control the rowdy audience, which he achieved with Goodbye from the White Horse Inn.
Goodbye, goodbye, I wish you all a last goodbye.
Then the famous Vera Lynn song, We'll Meet Again, calmed them completely, and everyone joined in. His final appearance was to lead the singing of the national anthem at the end of the concert. After which the commanding officer gave a brief speech of thanks to all concerned, and his call for three cheers raised the roof. The next day, Craig and Pamela met under their tree in the back garden. Practice for the concert had proved the best possible therapy, and always at the end of his private rehearsals, they had sat chatting, exchanging stories about themselves, and gradually Craig's impediment had become less and less. Always their meetings would end in a loving embrace, usually instigated by Pamela, but gratefully received by her wounded patient, who had learned to cuddle her in his own clumsy way. Today she gave him the biggest hug yet as she congratulated him on his performance. And he reciprocated, wreathed in smiles, and for the first time gave her the kind of kiss she had dreamed of.
A Fond Kiss is by Alice Dale and produced for radio by Capital Radio Productions.